You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
In the communications sector, there is a revolution taking place.
Look how far we've come. A third of the music released last year in this country was not even released on a CD.
Do you use a credit card online?
No, I live in Russia.
I'm concerned about the way the company's being run and the fiber to the node network.
Unless we can have clarity that we will not be subjected to further separation, we are not in a position to lodge an RFP bid.
You can't make it a technical game because the very people you're trying to protect are smarter than you.
We want to really change the world by making things so special you've got to have it.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello everybody and welcome to this week's edition of Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. With cyber crooks becoming more and more sneaky, it's probably timely that you revisit your safety measures when connected to the internet. Last week, PC Tools released the results of a worldwide survey that analyzes web security. The research demonstrated that while Australians are well aware of the risks of cybercrime, the majority are exposed to new and unknown threats on social networking sites, instant messaging services, and other online communications and networking tools. The fact that Australians have a high level of awareness about cybercrime is supported by other recent research, with the Unisys report confirming in April that Australians are more worried about computer security and identity theft than their personal safety or financial obligations. And with the ACMA finding in July that children and parents perceive contracting computer viruses as the greatest risk of online activity. The results of this survey show that while Australians are definitely security conscious, they lack the security savvy to protect themselves online, with the majority leaving themselves wide open to cybercrime because they aren't aware of how the latest threats operate and don't have the right security software. A key finding of the PC Tools report revealed that despite the known risks, research revealed that Australians are not actively protecting themselves online. Only 16% of the respondents reported having comprehensive protection against viruses, spyware, and other malware. That is, they used a security suite or a combination of point solutions such as an antivirus, anti-spyware, and anti-spam. And an alarming 25% of respondents did not know what type of security software they had installed. Only 2% of respondents were aware that the best way of protecting against new and unknown threats is to use behavioural protection. 31% used the same password across all websites. 35% of respondents did not update their security software regularly, with 16% doing it rarely and 10% never updating. And 55% of respondents actually ignored alerts from their security software. The research also revealed that Australians have a low level of awareness of key methods of infection online. Only 51% of respondents were aware that they could be infected by malware through an instant message, and only 61% were aware that they could be infected through social networking. 45% of respondents open attachments or links sent from friends or contacts straight away without checking them for legitimacy. And 15% of respondents thought that if they only visited legitimate websites, they would ensure their safety online. Keeping ahead of the baddies is hard enough, but making sure you have the right software to do the job is easy. Don't let complacency bite you on the bum. So when it's all said and done, how safe are you in today's online world?
This week on Tech Talk Radio.
Microsoft warns of a critical patch Tuesday. Identity thieves are using SMS-based lottery scams to target Australian consumers. Adam Turner takes a look at Nokia's new booklet 3G netbook. Or is that a laptop? And Skype responds to a Trojan security threat. First up, though, here's the latest from the Tech Talk News Desk with Dr. Ron.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, a Telstra internet outage leaves Big Pond customers twiddling their thumbs. ASIO investigates Chinese telecommunications technicians operating in Australia. Conroy is urged to end net censorship farce. Nokia encourages third-party developers. And Google assumes rights to all books. Welcome to Tech Talk News. Telstra internet services suffered a massive outage last week. A Telstra spokesperson told the Sydney Morning Herald that an outage affected all Telstra home and business broadband customers, as well as all NextG mobile internet customers nationwide between 7am and 8am on Thursday. IT analysts have suggested that the thousands of Telstra customers were most likely affected by a faulty domain name server, or DNS, and observed that local and international websites like Google and Yahoo could not be reached. Telstra has since confirmed that the outage was related to DNS services because of an issue with an international gateway. The spokesperson told ZDNet that the outage happened after its staff changed the international gateways Telstra was using to carry international traffic. The spokesperson said that the change was rolled back and that normal services were then restored at about 8:48 a.m. The outage is embarrassing for Telstra and follows a recent number of high-profile service interruptions at Sydney data centres. The Australian Security and Intelligence Organisation, ASIO, is investigating claims that Chinese telecommunications giant Huawei is employing technicians in Australia with direct links to the People's Liberation Army. The claims have been made by Huawei employees in Sydney and Melbourne, who are understood to have approached ASIO with their concerns. The Weekend Australian last week reported that Huawei has been the subject of critical scrutiny by intelligence agencies in the United States and Britain over its alleged links with the Chinese military and intelligence agencies. Huawei maintains that it is a legitimate telecommunications company, having been a part of a recent bid by Singtel Optus to build the $15 billion national broadband network. The federal government, which has warned about the growing threat of cyber espionage, has not made any public allegations against Huawei, which has been operating in Australia for 4 years. A spokesperson for Attorney General Robert McClelland told The Weekend Australian that ASIO has frequent contact with the telecommunications industry in Australia and that in that context, ASIO's contact with Huawei Telecommunications is not surprising. Minister for Broadband, Communications and the Digital Economy, Senator the Honourable Stephen Conroy, was last week urged to end the net censorship farce and produce long overdue trial results for independent assessment. The Age Tech reported the comments made by the opposition's communications spokesman, Senator Nick Minchin, which were made regarding trials of the controversial net filter that was initially slated to begin in December 2008 and take approximately 6 weeks. Senator Minchin observed that the trials were then pushed back until July, then September, and that as of last week, the government was still unable to put a date on when it will release the results of the trial to the public. The federal opposition also claimed that the government was now deliberately withholding the results to avoid embarrassment. Senator Conroy has so far refused to enter the debate about the freedom of speech issues associated with his internet censorship plan. A release date for the internet filter trial results is yet to be announced. In an effort to encourage more software developers to create applications for its devices, handset manufacturer Nokia has unveiled a software development kit for its Ovi online portal. IT Wire reports that the Nokia Software Development Kit will allow interested developers to create a range of applications that can run on a growing number of Nokia handsets. Nokia is understood to be working hard to position its Ovi store as a competitor to Apple's iTunes. Speaking at the Nokia World event currently underway in Stuttgart in Germany, Nokia's Executive Vice President for Services, Mr. Nicholas Savandam, said the company planned to progressively roll out mobile APIs for its services, with the first being for Ovi Maps. And authors who don't opt out of the massive Google Books online library will be giving the search engine giant tacit permission to digitize their work. Google aims to build a massive online library, and in an unusual twist to American copyright law, rights holders must now tell the search giant that it can't reproduce their work. In an agreement reached between Google and the American Authors Guild and the American Association of Publishers, authors can now opt out of the scheme and retain the right to sue Google in the event that their work is used without authority. The rights of Australian authors and publishers were not considered in the agreement, and the fairness hearing in the United States next month could yet result in the decision being quashed. I'm Dr. Ron, and that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
How are you, Adam?
Good. Yeah. Coming in off the bench to fill in for Dr. Ron.
Absolutely.
The Firefox honeymoon is over, yeah.
Dell, that computer mob, is looking to Windows 7 for a recovery.
You make a good point about compatibility.
Anything that works with Vista should work with Windows 7.
No one wants to touch Vista.
The consensus in our office was roadkill.
And the lag is terrible.
That's right.
Hang times from there.
Steer clear of Miley Cyrus.
That's good advice on any given day, really.
She did try and sell me everything Big Pond.
But what you're talking about is really, really seriously high-end video editing software.
Man, I just was not drunk enough to be distracted by the football.
Dr. Ron's still not happy with his cupcake, by the way.
Biggest waste of time ever is clicking that button.
So where does the Xbox fit into all this?
You buy that if you work for Microsoft.
You buy that for someone you don't like.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Okay. Hello, everybody. Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. We're here yet again. It's another week. Welcome wherever you're listening to us, in New Zealand or in Australia or on the net or on the radio or on the internet. Oh, my goodness. Welcome. Dr. Ron is here. Dr. Graham is here. Sorry, there's a camera. Well, it looks like a camera, but it's not. There's just things in the studio. Anyway, welcome aboard, everyone. Dr. Ron, how's your week been so far? Where were you last
been
week? Did you bring
good.
A note?
I did bring a note. Sorry, it's my note.
And Adam was going to buy you an Xbox. Thank
sorry
you.
About that. Yeah, he was going to buy me. Does that mean he doesn't like me? Oh, it was a very funny show last week. It was good to listen. My apologies. I'm sorry I didn't make it.
That's all right.
But I'm here this week. That's what counts.
That's all right.
Yeah, it was funny listening. How are you, Graham?
Yeah, good, Dr. Ron. How are you?
Good, good. Good job last week. And good job last night, Andrew, was listening to you on another radio station.
Look, I'm feeling a bit radio stationed out at the moment. yes, it was. It was fun.
What were you doing last night?
I spent 2 hours in the 3AW studios in Melbourne talking about technology and stuff like that with one particular person who's near and dear to the Tech Talk Radio listeners, and that's Susan McLean. She's a
cyber safety expert.
Cyber safety guru. Yeah, the gurus were in last night. So we were talking all about that on commercial radio here in Melbourne.
She used to be with Victoria Police and is now doing her own thing, a private consultant in the field. Is that right?
That's right. That's right.
Are we going to come back on the program sometime?
Absolutely.
I hope you cornered her while you were there.
Well, no, yes.
About coming on the program, I mean.
She's very busy at the moment. She and Sally Coburn.
Yeah,
AKA Dr. Feelgood.
Another doctor.
She's a real one.
She's a real one, yes.
Well, a medical doctor.
She's a medical doctor.
Absolutely. We were talking on her program last night on 3AW for a few hours, 2 hours. I'm just waiting to get a call from the ABC tomorrow, and I go, no more radio. But no, it was good. It was good. And we sat there and talked about all sorts of stuff. I was very impressed with Sally. She's a tech guru. Did you know?
No, I didn't know that.
No. She knows what Raiderays are. She builds her own computers, gets her hands in there and does all that sort of stuff.
Has she got her own Facebook page?
I'm not sure. She's got a few things which are a bit neglected in the cyber world, but no, I'm not sure. Maybe she has. Why?
Oh, I just wondered I was going to follow her, or she might even Twitter. I don't know.
She might. We'll probably put out an invite when the dust settles from this week and see if she wants to come in and have a chat on our show. So,
yeah.
Anyway. All right. Yes, that was my news. I've also been playing with Windows 7 again, the ever-changing Windows 7. I'm running my laptop here. I decided to blow away the old installation for Windows 7 the other night.
On what, your laptop or your home computer?
Yeah, on my home computer. And on my laptop. And in blowing said stuff away, I did a fresh install on Windows 7. And it works the damn sight better, let me tell you.
So you've got it running on your laptop now, the one that's here in the studio.
I did. I previously tried. The comparison is I previously tried an upgrade from Windows Vista Ultimate to Windows 7 Ultimate.
Yep.
The upgrade took 2.5 hours to do on putting the CD in the drive and off she went. And it performed, well, one could say disappointingly, compared to my home machine, which was running it on an SSD drive and a fresh install.
But that's an extraordinary machine. That's not an ordinary machine.
What, the one at home?
With the SSD drive and all that.
Oh, well, the only difference from that is just that. It's an SSD drive. But anyway, this laptop now boots in 30 seconds, which I thought was quite good for a Windows 7 device.
Okay.
And it sort of becomes about usable about 45-second mark. So
That's
pretty
good, yeah.
And then, of course, I had to hunt around and find all the drivers for a laptop because laptops have got all sorts of funny things in them, from built-in audio to webcams to DVD players, all those sort of things. And that took some time to find. Well, I found them all on the HP site, but then you've got to work out which ones to download.
Yep, and whether there's a special Windows 7 one or whether you have to use the Vista one.
Well, how to use the Vista? Hewlett-Packard haven't heard of Windows 7 yet. Let me give you the tip.
Probably depends on the model. and, you know, whether it's, you know, they probably have some models that they have support for and some that they don't, I would imagine.
Yeah, well, we'll see. But anyway, that was the perils of it, and I managed to get through there relatively unscathed. It works. Nice and fast, having to reconnect all my wireless networks as I travel around the countryside again, but that's par for the course. Dr. Ron, do you have any correspondence that I haven't got that need to be entered into?
Look, always. It's funny you should ask. We do. We do have correspondence that should be entered into that you don't know about. Firstly, you can watch us on Ustream if you're listening live. Go to ustream.tv/TechTalkRadioAU. We're there now. You can also download the show on the podcast. You can visit us on the forum, forum.techtalkradio.com.au. We do have a new forum user. Hello to Gadden in the United Kingdom.
Hello.
So Gadden has signed up in the last
week. In the UK.
UK, yes, that's exciting. Matthew from Denmark says, which Matthew from Denmark do you reckon this would be?
The one who's just procreated again.
He has, yes. Congratulations. Congratulations. Yes, young Oscar. Yeah, is his new son, which
only
is
know
very,
one other Oscar.
Very exciting.
He knows the Cookie Monster.
Oh, really?
Yes.
I dare say Matthew's Oscar would know about the Cookie Monster.
He probably will very shortly, yes.
Yeah. Matthew says, two things for Tech Talk tonight, Dr. Ron. Traditional light bulbs are now illegal and have been removed from the shelves.
This is in Denmark.
Yeah.
Now, they're talking about doing something like that here.
They're talking about it. They've done it over there.
Yeah, well, they talk. We talk here.
We talk here. We talk a lot. Number two, express buses now have free Wi-Fi.
Okay. You mean as in motor vehicle buses have free Wi-Fi? Well, that's good. The public transport. I think there was Sydney were planning on rolling out something like that. I think I read not so long back. I don't know whether it was on their buses. Might have been on their trains or something. Okay. But they were talking about doing that sort of stuff.
That's impressive. Yeah, that'd be good for a bit of twittering on the way home or whatever. Yeah,
absolutely. But see, in Australia, we're a little different to that.
Mobile Facebook.
We put free Wi-Fi in our sporting venues. We don't worry about public transport. Not many people use the public transport. Well, actually. But if you go to the Melbourne Cricket Ground here, for example, 100,000 people fit into that. And guess what? They get free Wi-Fi.
They get free Wi-Fi. Yeah. Our public transport, though, they can't even make the tickets work. So.
No, we're going to get two tickets in case one doesn't work. You use the other one. How's that going to work, Dr. Ron?
That's a worry. We asked Mike Key to come on the program about 18 months ago to talk about the new system
They've
and how it's going
to work.
They've
got better things to do with their time, like making their system work.
Which is a bit sad. We hope that they'll be able to come on one day because we'd like to hear about the technical side of how the system
works. That'd
be good,
wouldn't it?
I reckon it would, yeah.
Is any other state in Australia subject to Mike Key, or is it just we're lucky in Victoria, in Melbourne in particular, where we are?
I don't know. I was blown away by the Oyster card system in London when I was over there this time last year. That just works so well. It's so easy to use. Just a proximity card and just wave it in front of the ticket barriers.
What are the problems with the traditional tickets that we use at the moment? Do they just fail regularly? Or I'm not familiar. I'm being not a public transport user. What is it because the machines fall over, or is it because the barcode doesn't read properly on them? Or what's the problem with them?
I don't know that there's any significant problem with them, but they're just old-fashioned.
It's just time for a change, is it?
It's time for a change. You can't go online and find out what your balance is. There's no technical integration.
Your current cards, you have to put it into a machine that pulls the card in and out to read it. The new cards are just a proximity card. You just put
an RFID
type card. So you just put it against the machine and it'll read it. So that means no moving parts, more reliability is part of the idea.
Thank you for answering my question there, Dr. Graham. I knew there'd be a reason why we were going down another track. That's good.
But with the existing system, there's no intelligence built into it. Like the system that they have in the UK, you'll say, that there's a certain amounts that they're going to charge you for different sectors or different parts of the network, but it'll be capped at a certain amount. It'll say, you've travelled from here to here today. We're only going to charge you this amount. So it's intelligent in how it actually builds you.
Yeah, Mike is supposed to do the same thing, supposed to calculate the best fare.
That's it, exactly.
So
yeah.
It's also supposed to work on regional public transport as well as metro. So there's a few things that they're aiming for it to do there.
Well, next we'll be able to integrate it with our e-tags and drive on tollways and do that too, maybe. Who knows?
That's an interesting idea.
Interesting concept. Anyway.
Stick your my key on the dashboard or something.
Yeah, that'd be good. Hey. You take it everywhere, wherever you go.
Well, it might be a different tag, but you might be able to unify the account somehow, so you have one, who knows.
Take it the next step. Do it for air travel.
The toll type charging system seems to be an open system in that the different providers share tolling information back and forward. So,
I know two different toll roads.
And you can do it in Sydney
interstate
too,
as well. Yeah.
All interstate it works.
Yeah, your e-tag from here works on the Sydney tolls, does it? Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's one of the great things about the system. You get a tag in Sydney, you can use it everywhere, and same with Melbourne.
Oh, look, you'll remember as well as I do the hassle of the toll booths that used to be on the Westgate Bridge, and yeah, everybody have to slow down and find change and throw it in the bucket, and it didn't always work, and my goodness, and this is, you know, so much better.
When I used to live in Sydney, I used to remember the ones on the Tarba Bridge.
Oh, the Sydney ones.
Yeah, because Melbourne lost theirs well and true before Sydney did.
That was a long time,
and the Harbour Bridge ones were still there and used to piff money in these little white things as you drive past at a million miles an hour and see if you could go through on the red.
Okay.
Because they had green and red lights. Anyone listening to us in Sydney, I'm sure you remember.
What happened if you went through on a red?
I don't know, but it was a bit of fun.
Oh, but did you get through without paying or something?
No. Just had to you put the right money in the thing because it was this big, huge, like, colander thing that you just throw your money in. And no one would stop. You'd just keep going. And you wouldn't wait till it went green. You'd just keep going and just throw it in. And
you're just an anarchist.
That's the problem. Well, that's what happens when you want to go from North Sydney to South Sydney. You know, just anarchy rules.
Did they cause huge queues behind them for people waiting to pay the toll or...?
I used to not travel in peak hour because I used to live and work on the North Shore, and it was only for social reasons that I would travel into go across the bridge to go to town. So
yeah, that makes sense.
The other exciting news this week.
Yeah.
You're the user, Andrew, of a Wacom tablet, aren't you?
I collect Wacom tablets. Don't you worry about that. I think I've got about six now.
Tell everybody listening, what is a Wacom tablet?
Well, a Wacom tablet is basically a device which allows you to use a pen instead of a mouse to negotiate your way around a computer of sorts. Now, a lot of people go, oh, how do you do that?
How do you click?
Well, you just touch the pad. And if you right-click, there's a little right-click button on the side of the pen. You just click on it as you do.
Ah.
When you do these sort of things.
So how do you move without clicking if touching the pad clicks?
You just wave your pen across the top of the pad. It's like a proximity sensor to which you were just talking about.
So you move it across without touching the pad.
That's right.
Ugh.
That's right. Now,
I've seen you use a Wacom tablet and a pen, and you're very, very fast.
I've never used one.
I swear by them. I think they are probably, they speed up productivity like you wouldn't believe. You can turn it around into today's modern world. Have you ever tried writing text with a mouse?
Yes, you can't do it.
That's correct.
Yeah.
And you need a pen to do that. So from a graphical point of view, that's fantastic. But it also just means that naturally, I find that a pen just works. I'm used to it. I grew up, ever since I was knee-high to a primary school teacher, I used a pen. It worked.
So did I. But
so why not use it online? Why not use it in computer land?
But how would it help me? I mean, I'm pretty good. I think I'm pretty good with my mouse and my keyboard.
You can't write with it. You can't sign your name with it.
I don't need to.
Yes.
I want to edit an audio, a podcast with it.
Oh, let me tell you how fast it makes editing podcasts.
I've seen him edit podcasts with it.
And I use them for editing television programs, and I can't do it on a mouse. It slows me down too much using a mouse.
I've seen him edit television programs with it.
Okay.
It's pretty impressive.
So, trust me, I'm an editor.
I do. I respect your opinion. That's why I'm talking about you, because I haven't used one.
Haven't you?
And I'm trying to imagine what the benefit would be.
Do you think that a Wacom tablet and pen would be something that one of our listeners in Australia, unfortunately, just within Australia, would be keen to get hold of?
Oh, I think anyone would be keen to get hold of. Are we giving one away or something?
Let's give one away. Do you want to give one away?
What?
Have you got one?
I've got one.
I should come to the meetings more often, shouldn't I?
Didn't you read the 8 pages of minutes I took at the last meeting?
No, my email's been fluttery of late.
Not that bad.
You weren't even here last week. What are you talking about?
We have got a Wacom Bamboo Fun USB.
They're great. I've got a few of them at the office. They're really, really good.
All right. The reason why I say Australia only is because we're only going to ship to Australia, so apologies there. Now, Adam Turner has successfully wangled this. He's done an excellent job.
Well done, Adam.
Well done, Adam.
You did mention this.
Yeah, all in the name of Tech Talk. Now, Wacom, he's got here, even going to throw in a copy of Adobe Photoshop Elements and Corel Painter Essentials.
Oh, wow.
There you go.
So this is going to suit somebody with an artistic bent to them, or someone who plays with photos or something like that.
Someone who does graphics editing, or someone who does something along those lines. If you send us an email, keep your emails to 30 words or less, because... Send them through. Though. We love to get your emails, but try and keep the word count down a bit. Feedback at techtalkradio.com.au. Entries are going to close in 2 weeks' time. So,
This is a quick turnaround.
Yeah, it is Friday, September the 18th, and we're going to announce the winner on the Monday's show after that, which is the 21st of September. So, apologies to international listeners. We can only deliver here within Australia.
Unless you want to have it picked up.
unless you want to fly over and grab it or something.
There you go.
The judge's decision's final, blah, 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 blah. All correspondence will be destroyed and not entered into, and you know the drill, says Adam. So get to it. Tell us what you're going to do and why you need a Wacom Bamboo Fun.
Oh, I just told
tablet.
Them all that.
Yeah,
oh,
well, everyone will have their own.
Make it easy then, won't it?
Everyone will have their own particular uses and angles.
And that's what we want. We want to know what you're going to do with it. We're going to give it to someone who's going to do something really interesting with it.
That's it. So get typing feedback at techtalkradio.com.au. Let us know why you need one.
And the other thing you have to do, though, once you've got it, is you have to send us back some info on what you did and how it performed for you.
Oh, good. Now, in all seriousness, they are. I wasn't aware of this, just by the way. It's good. Thanks, guys. But in all, yes, I swear by them. They're terrific. The bamboos are great. I think they're about 4 inches by 6 inches too, because you can get the really big ones, and I don't like the really big ones because your hand has to move too far across your workspace.
Okay, so a big one isn't as much of an advantage. You like a smaller one?
I don't think so, because I like to. You can at least with your wrist, you can get from one side of the tablet to the other side quite easily. The only downside of the little ones, if you're using double screens, things move fairly quickly across your tablet as you map them all up. But they just plug in, they just work. And I think also with the bamboos, they've got little function keys across the top, which you can assign to your favourite program or you can assign to anything you like. You know, you can any Windows function, and I'm sure you can do it with a Mac. Like, for example, Show Desktop. F1 can be Show Desktop, and you've just got those great little things available to you. So they're terrific devices. Well done, Adam, for securing that.
He's done well, hasn't he?
That's terrific. So 30 words or less to feedback.
30 words or less to feedback at techtalkradio.com.au.
About what you're going to do, and we're going to give it away in 2 weeks.
We need your entry by the 18th of September, which is a Friday.
Do we? Oh, good. Then we're going to have a meeting and talk about it, are we?
We will. See, that's what we like, meetings at Tech Talk Radio, don't
we? Come to the next one.
Warlock said something that I was almost going to pull you up on. F1's got to be for help. You can't have F1 being anything other than help.
If you want.
Yeah.
F1 on your keyboard's for help. F1 on your bamboo doesn't have to be for help. It can be for applications.
You're trying to confuse me now.
Okay. Consider yourself confused. Speaking of confusing.
Yes.
Or speaking of arrogance, probably is more the point. Dr. Ronnie, in the news you mentioned about Google and this book thing. You know,
that's pretty arrogant, isn't it?
I just thought, what? And I think GD, our moderator out there, he also sent something in the mail, which I actually got during the course of the week about these books things. Google are going to actually assume that they have the rights to reproduce a book.
Yes.
Assume.
Yes.
Now, in as history has passed, up until this very present moment, no one has the rights to actually reproduce anybody's work without approval.
Google has apparently reached an agreement between itself, the American Authors Guild, and the American Association of Publishers.
Well, that's fine for if you live in the Americas, but what about outside of the United States of Google?
The United States of Google, they don't care.
That's Tara, isn't it?
Sorry. The United States of Tara, that's something altogether different. No, they just don't care. It's all right, it doesn't matter.
But that's going to set a huge precedent. Now, you were saying too in the news that potentially there's going to be an appeal or it's going to another court or something like that. So
there's going to be
possibility of overruling it again?
Yep, something called a fairness hearing will take place in the United States next month. So the decision could be overturned.
Well, let's see if common sense prevails there.
You're not a fan.
I'm very much, if someone creates something, then the rights belongs to them.
You can opt out.
Well, that's an American thing too.
You can say, I've written this book and I don't want Google to index it and I want to reserve my rights to sue them if they do reproduce it. And they'll go, okay. But if you don't do anything...
Yeah, but once it's out there. You can't pull it back in. Yeah, that's the joys of this digital world that we live in. You know, if you put something online, surely, you know, the Wayback Machine will index it, all that sort of stuff. I just think... And that's the other thing about the United States. They're very much an opt-out. So you're in unless you opt out, as opposed to a lot of other countries, and Australia included, we're an opt-in society. You cannot receive unsolicited email unless you opt in or unless you give company whoever a business card or you have some form of commercial transaction with them. Then they can put you on without asking.
I can think of one exception to that, where we automatically went into the you must opt out situation, because otherwise the system wouldn't have been worth introducing.
I know the one you're meeting. It's a telephone one.
That's exactly right. When they introduced caller line identification in Australia about, it's going to say about 10 years ago.
Remember the brouhaha that kicked in with that? All the civil libertarians were up in arms. This is the end of the world as we know it because phone numbers are going to be presented.
And the government said, but if we don't have it that way around, you're only going to have 1% or 2% of people turning it on. It's not going to be worth doing. So we're going to put everyone... Everyone's going to be sending their phone number when they make phone calls, and if you want to opt out, then you can. You can dial a code.
Cam on our chat says the right thing.
People got over it.
People got over themselves, yeah.
Everyone does. It's change, which a lot of people have problems with. Like we were talking on 3AW last night about it. You know, the internet's going to do some amazing things. Don't don't try and sort of like say, no, this is bad and ignore it and it'll go away, because it's not. It's here to stay. And just go with the flow. Learn about it. Get involved with it. And watch, you'll have a lot more fun online. I was just saying, Cam on the chat was just saying that
Hi, Cam.
We shouldn't have to opt out. It's the principle. I agree. Totally concur with that. But anyway, we live in the right country for that. Live in other countries, got problems.
Mm.
All right. We should stick to the rundown and go to a music break. We haven't even started yet.
No need to panic. It's all right.
What else should we talk about? Apple iPod updates expected on Thursday. Apple's media extravaganza next week is being greeted with the unusual calm because of its uncertain if charismatic Steve Jobs will appear, and the investors have nothing much to bet on apart from new iPods with cameras. Now, this came out a while. The rumor about iPods and cameras has been out for a while, but potentially we'll find out officially in a couple of days.
What in it a camera in your iPod?
In case you want to take a photo.
Yeah, that's right. But you got one in your camera, and next thing you know, everyone will be at school doing happy snaps. Next thing, your iPod's going to have 3G access, and the next thing, you're going to have Wi-Fi access, and yeah, it'll just turn into another phone.
The Apple will become a palm top. The iPod will become a palm top.
Is that where they're headed?
I don't know.
Why would you want a photo in your iPod? I don't understand. Well, you can't share it with anyone.
Wouldn't you want your covers for your cover float? Unless you don't have a cover and you want to make your own.
Like wallpaper on your display?
No. If you've seen the iPod-y things, they've got cover float. The whole screen is
taken
up.
Take a photo of the cover when...
Maybe. But you don't normally need to do that with most albums. They're already online and they come down magically.
The iPods, there's already been a lot of the iPods where you can put your photos on it and view them on and use it as a photo viewer to view the photos on the screen.
Oh, okay. Yep.
Yeah, so it's probably a logical extension of that to be able to take a photo on it.
All right. We'll wait and see what happens there. I like iPods. My wife has one. She's finally worked out how to use it.
I like my iPod too, except it still plays my podcast backwards.
Oh, yeah,
No, if I've got four episodes that I haven't listened to, it plays the newest one, and then the one before that, and then the one before that, and then the one before that.
Yeah, it's dumb. It's not in chronological order.
That's right.
Why don't they just fix it, put a software menu option in?
Yeah, that's what I've been asking, Apple. I keep sending them feedback forms on the website.
Do they reply to
No, you? They don't.
Warlock's, not this bloke again.
Warlock's going, put a camera and a GPSR, I think he means the other way around, into the iPod Touch. You want an iPod Touch with a GPRS?
Oh,
and,
GPS receiver.
Yeah, and that's probably what he means. GPS receiver and a camera.
And then your iPod can tell you where to go.
Well, yes. Yeah, did you know?
In the nicest possible way.
Speaking of,
what are you laughing at, Dr. Ron?
You've been trying to tell Apple where to go. They won't listen to you.
Apple's telling everyone where to go. You know you can now get TomTom for your Apple iPhone?
I've heard this, yeah.
Yeah, but you can't mount it properly in the state of Victoria, so you get booked for it probably now. Oh, have you seen all these new things that are coming out?
Why do you need to connect the TomTom to your iPhone?
Because then you know where you're going. It's a navigation device.
No, don't connect it. No, it's built in.
It's built in. It's software that lobs on your iPhone.
Oh,
it's
right.
It's the TomTom navigation software.
Why don't you just use the TomTom?
Well, you just get the software.
Because that means you have to carry an extra device. If you use the iPhone, then it's...
Yeah, it's a bit like Nokia. Nokia has their maps in their devices, and they charge you for it if you want to subscribe to it. I don't. But anyway, you can get on the Ovi thing. Adam's got more about that later. Yep. That's Nokia's story sort of thing.
There was Ovi stuff in the news.
Yeah, there was, wasn't there?
Nokia's released a software development kit for Ovi, which is the online portal.
Yeah. And it's got APIs, which is, what is it?
Application
program interfaces.
Interfaces, yeah, so people can write software.
Because they're trying to get Ovi to take off, like iTunes has.
Is Adam talking about that later?
He's talking about something Nokia, notepad-y things.
Oh, good.
And there's a reference to that in there, I believe.
Good.
Speaking of that, Nokia is seeking developers to help in the Apple rivalry. This is what this is all about. And they said it would start to open up software platforms to external developers in a bid to boost the quantity and quality of software for Nokia phones. Now, most Nokia phones run on the Symbian system, don't they? The S60 platform.
Most Nokia smartphones do, yeah.
Oh, what are their early? What do their dumb phones work on?
Oh, I don't know. They're just phones.
Okay. So anyway, they're looking for applications. So they're actually doing what Google did, because remember when Google launched Maps and things like that, they basically threw APIs at everyone and said, here, go and develop. We've built you the tool, now go and make it into a platform. So off they did. So Nokia are obviously doing that for their phones and things like that. So Yeah, there you go.
They're feeling the pressure. They're under pressure from Apple. They're under pressure from HTC.
What about Google?
They've had a pretty good for a long time, Nokia.
Well, yeah. But see, Nokia, I think, are going to team up with Microsoft for desktop or handset delivery of video and other sort of rich media. So they're going to team up with that. So maybe we're going to start seeing a little bit of competition come into the world from that point of view too. So, yeah. All right. What else has been happening in the news this week, Dr. Ron? Anything that's really grabbed you? I know there's been some ISP issues. One of the particular ISPs which I've been looking for at the moment is they decided to debit credit cards of their customers before they should. And, of course, ACMA has come out and given them a big, big fine and say, you're not allowed to do that. That's very naughty.
Oh, okay.
It was a Perth-based company. And, yeah, they've just definitely been in the wrong place at the wrong time and got caught out.
Big Telstra outage last week. That was some ISP news.
There was a Telstra outage yesterday. Was it yesterday? No, it might have been last week. It was the DNS thing you were talking about.
Yeah, big DNS one, and lots of people just had their internets disappear for about an hour.
I heard about that. They were blaming an earthquake in Indonesia for it, but someone tripped over the extension cord down the gog.
Yeah, it wasn't that simple.
Yeah.
So it was on Tuesday or something. I'm trying to remember now. I'm just looking at my news notes here, but it was out for about an hour. So anyone who was relying on NextG on their mobile phone handsets or anyone who was a Big Pond broadband customer, they would have been affected.
Yeah, well, there you go. Back to the ISP. That was a Perth-based ISP called WebAce.
Oh, this is your one that billed people.
Yeah, they allegedly took money from customers' banks and credit cards without proper authorization. It's a bit of a naughty. ACMA announced that it had directed the ISP to comply with the Telecommunications Consumer Protections Code, and the failure to comply could lead to a $1 million fine. So it's a bit of a slap across the wrist. But why would you do that? Come on, you've got to have loyalty with your customers, and as soon as you go and burn them like that and do direct debits, and you're in all sorts of strife. Getting back to your Telstra thing too, I had a Telstra Liney over at my place during the course of the week because I'm about to do the big breakaway from the big T and go naked DSL and all that sort of stuff. They don't like going under houses, did you know?
I know. That's a very funny story. So the technicians got there and said...
G'day, Scott, if you're listening.
G'day, Scott. So Scott said, g'day, Andrew, I'm here to set up your new phone line.
He rang me three times, actually, because I wasn't home, I was at work. Oh. But he sort of said, where do you want this phone line? I said, oh, there's an MDF under the house. Can you just crane it and tag it and that'll be fine?
Hang on a minute. You've used about eight different abbreviations.
Off you go. People won't understand.
There's a what? There's an MDF under the house.
That's correct.
A main distribution frame.
Yeah, it's where you crimp your little things in.
And most people wouldn't have one of those under their house.
No, most people don't live in my house.
That's what you'd have in a business where all your phone lines terminate on a special frame in the cupboard.
That's right.
Yeah, you did. So how many lines have you got into this house? Andrew, so don't you worry about that, son.
But Andrew being Andrew, he's got one of these things under his house. And Scott didn't want to climb under your house.
No. He was reluctant to fly another cable in off the pole out the front too.
Why?
Because...
To what?
No, he just didn't give a reason. He said, oh, do I have to fly another cable in? I said, I think so, Scott. Oh, okay. So anyway, then he rang me back about 10 minutes later and says, where do you want this? And I said, well, as I just said before, there's a thing under the house. You go in there and just tag it and crimp it in and crane it in and tag it.
And you'll run your own socket.
Yeah. And he goes, oh, do you want me to go under your house? I said, yes. Oh, I don't like getting under houses. I said, yeah, that's not my problem. Well, you're a liney. That's what you've chosen
Scott,
to do.
Scott, you're in the wrong job. Yes, well, that's a bit odd, isn't it?
Yeah.
But he did in the end?
Yeah, he reluctantly got under the house because I think he was fishing for me to say, oh, don't worry about it, I'll do it. But, like, you know, just coil it up and leave it on the pole or something like that. But, no, I sort of said, no, that'd be good if you could do that. That'd be good. Anyway.
I think probably what he wanted to do was just run it into a socket somewhere rather than have to, yeah.
Yeah, but what do you do? Just pull it down off the side of your house, drapes it across the front yard and put a socket in the front room or something? No, I don't think so. But anyway, we got there. That's just one of my war stories for the course of the week.
So you've got another phone line at home now.
Yeah. This is in anticipation of disconnecting all others because I want this one to work properly and I want it to be brand new. Because I'm going to go naked, baby. Naked DSL. It's going to be the way to go. I'm quite looking forward to it, actually. And good news, Dr. Ron, is that they didn't disconnect any of my other services while they did it. So good on you, Scott, for that.
Oh, that's good.
Because I remember last time they came to your place, they took out one of your DSL lines at the same time, didn't they?
No, don't go there. Yeah.
Anyway, I'm sure everyone's had, they've got their war stories from all telecommunications providers coming along and plugging things into their place, but that's the joys of technology and the world that we live in with these sort of things. Hey, you are listening to Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. Dr. Ron is in this evening. Dr. Graham is also here. Where's JD lately before we go to the break? Have you seen him?
I haven't seen him.
He was off, he went camping or something and hasn't returned. With his kids?
He's got some work commitments.
Yeah, that was what I heard, yeah.
Okay.
He will be
for
back.
A few he'll weeks, be... but he'll, yeah, he'll be back in another couple of weeks, I think, yeah.
That'd be good, because there's a lot of Mac stuff we've got to talk about. One of my friends, one of my colleagues in the office, Brian, he loaded up his new version of the Leopard. Not Happy Jan.
The Snow Leopard.
That's the one, not Happy Jan.
Oh.
Because a lot of the stuff, because they removed all this PowerPC technology out of it, and of course all of his old programs won't work, like his old Dreamweavers and stuff like that, so he had to go back. You need emulators or something like that, he was saying. But anyway, I might try and coax him into coming in, having a chat, telling us his first-hand experience.
Brian's been in before. I don't think he's been on air before.
No, he's been here before, but he hasn't been on the radio.
He's had a sticky beak.
Yeah. He actually cuts all the view from the couches these days. Have you heard of the great things that Adam puts together
he's
for us?
He's clever like that, Brian. Yeah, we need him to come in. Tell us about Snow Leopard. Yeah.
Well, we'll hear from Adam after this.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show.
Tech Talk Radio.
Tell us about your new toy. This is
the one that occupies
the
room.
This is gadget of the year, this one.
I just want to click an Xe and have this work.
So you've got a workaround for the Android market now for your Android.
How long is that in viewing time?
About 84 minutes.
The only option is to buy it outright then.
It is, it really is.
Have you unplugged all the fax machines?
Yeah, go on.
I tell you though, that you've got to be careful doing that. Some people get very narky.
Internet villain of the year.
And the moral of the story is back up.
Backups, for goodness sake. This is along the lines of the AFL with drug cheats, isn't it?
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show, Tech Talk Radio.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
I'm feeling the urge to lift the game a bit here and try and get through a lot of the stuff on the rundown. You know, promote a few things and we never get to them at times. It's a shocking thing, but anyway, that's life. Hey, we spoke about Nokia earlier on in the piece. They've got, you know, they've moved away, or they're not moved away, they're diversifying from their handset range of mobile phones and smartphones and PDA things, and they've got a new netbooky sort of thing coming out. Have you heard about this?
We talked about this very briefly on the show a couple of weeks ago, did we?
Yeah, I think we did. It was the Nokia booklet thing, which is a phone company, because phone companies have been diversifying into, you know, get a plan and you get a laptop or something like that with it and you pay the laptop off on the plan now.
Yeah.
But Nokia's actually come out with a bit of hardware, apparently, according to all reports.
Well, that's interesting, isn't it?
Would you buy a laptop from a phone manufacturer or would you buy a laptop from a laptop manufacturer?
Oh, I don't know. If I was in the market for a it's interesting, the netbook segment of the market, because...
Get an Agora, wouldn't you? One of Kogan's things?
I don't know.
They're the little netbooky things he's got. Mm. They're about $300-$400.
So okay,
they look terrific.
Yeah, I mean, I can see a huge advantage in having a phone built into it, so that it's on the mobile board. You know, not for making phone calls, but the phone, you know, the mobile broadband thing.
I've got this mental picture of someone with a laptop held up to their ear making a phone call.
Well, no, but it could connect to your Bluetooth headset.
Yeah, it could. It could. And it could use it for mobile broadband and all that sort of stuff.
Exactly right, yeah.
Anyway, Adam Turner has had a view from the couch this week, and he checked out or is looking into the new booklet.
Nokia has decided to throw its hat in the ring with a netbook. I'm wondering if it's a question of too little too late, or perhaps a masterstroke in the war with Google, Microsoft and Apple. It's always dangerous to tell someone to stick to their knitting, and many people doubted Apple's ability to cross over into mobile phones. That said, if Nokia's Booklet 3G wants to do well against the dirt cheap Kogan Agoras of the world, as well as the high-end EPCs such as the S101, it really needs to be an iPhone-esque game changer, not just an also-ran. Unless it sidesteps the competition. Details are scarce at this point, but we do know that Nokia's Booklet 3G will feature a 10-inch screen and weigh in at 1.25 kilos. It will run Windows on an Intel Atom Z530 processor with about 12 hours battery life. Connectivity will include Bluetooth, 3G mobile broadband, and 802.11b, G, and N. This all sounds like the foundations of a decent notebook, but nothing revolutionary. I'm wondering if it will let you make voice calls as well. I'm not sure how practical that would be, considering that owners probably already have a smartphone in their pocket, but at least it would help the booklet 3G stand out from the crowd. The two items on the spec list that specifically caught my eye were GPS and HDMI. GPS seems like a no-brainer, although once again, it's probably not as useful as GPS on a smartphone. If there's a smartphone in your pocket, you're unlikely to pull out the booklet 3G to check your location as you walk down the street. You're also unlikely to sit it on the passenger seat while you drive. HDMI seems like an odd addition, although when you think about it, a HDMI output would probably be more useful than GPS. With a HDMI output, you could easily watch content on your television, such as photos and videos transferred from your smartphone. Better yet, you could take the booklet 3G to a friend's house and hook it into their television, which would be a neat trick to show off the booklet 3G's usefulness to potential buyers in their own home. This might explain why Nokia has opted for the Atom Z530 processor rather than the more common N270 processor. My understanding is that the Z series supports the GMA500 graphics chipset, which can take much of the load off the processor by decoding MPEG-4, including H.264 and VC1 files. Now, in Nokia's eyes, I think the big value add with the booklet 3G seems to be the link to the Ovi suite of services. Now, I have to admit that I haven't played with Ovi because it's tied to Nokia phones, so maybe Andrew's tried it, but it comes across to me as a mix between Google's online services, Apple's Mobile Me, and the iTunes Store. Tight integration with Ovi would obviously be handy if you're already a Nokia smartphone user. Non-Nokia users have probably already sworn their allegiance to the likes of Google, Apple, or Microsoft when it comes to cloud computing, and they're probably not looking for yet another suite of online services in their life. The booklet 3G is designed to easily sync with smartphones, but I don't know if this extends beyond Symbian on the high-end Nokias. Of course, the netbook is running Windows, so there's nothing stopping you adding software to sync with Windows Mobile, Android, or an iPhone. It's early days, but it seems like the booklet 3G will probably only look attractive to owners of N-series Nokias, such as the new N97. Now, targeting existing Nokia users isn't a bad strategy when you consider the massive market share that Nokia enjoys. The big question is, how will Nokia go to market with the booklet 3G? It could have a hard time breaking into the major retail chains, where it will languish alongside a range of heavily discounted competition. On the other hand, Nokia could stick with its existing channels and sell the booklet 3G in phone stores, bundled with an N-series Nokia, for example, perhaps with the two SIM cards on the one monthly bill. That would be a killer move which could blow the competition out of the water. Nokia's booklet 3G doesn't have to be the best of the bunch. It just has to be smart when it comes to leveraging Nokia's army of existing users.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
There you go. You're going to go pick yourself up one of those little guys, as Adam was sort of saying, and appeal to the N-series users on Nokia handsets. Just a little bit more information about it. With the Atom Z530 CPU, apparently it's a tad sluggish with Windows 7 loaded up on it. So if you're a Windows 7 wannabe, maybe this is not for you. The keyboard is described as one of the most impressive ones that has been seen on a netbook, which is interesting. Obviously, the Ovi key works well. And the battery life, which is a sore point in Dr. Ron's world with your cupcake. The battery life on this was, you get a 3,840 milliamp battery, which gives you around 12 hours worth of use. Which is not bad. How long would you get on a normal netbook, you know, with a regular battery? Like, are we talking a couple of hours?
2 hours, 3 hours?
Yeah. Well, this thing's claiming a lot. 12 hours use on a sort of like a netbook type sort of thing, which isn't too bad, but seeing's believing there.
Seeing is believing. Yeah, those Atom processors are very popular in the little netbooks.
Yeah. Well, what the power consumption's like.
A lot of them around.
Done a really good battery on it. The other interesting bit was the device, according to Nokia World, is going to sell for about 575 euros, which I'm not sure what the current going rate is for that, but I think it's about double here. Oh, here we go. Australian dollars, $983. before any subsidies and wireless carriers and all that sort of stuff get through to it. So, I don't know. Will it take off? If it's got battery life like that, I reckon it might. But other than that, it's just an extension of a mobile phone, really, isn't it?
Yeah. It'll have to compete against the other netbooks. It's just got to... It won't win just on its own merits of being a Nokia netbook. It'll have to compete against all the other netbooks and be good.
Well, you've got some severe competition in that end of the market.
That's right.
There's some very interesting stuff out there. Anyway, there you go. Thanks, Adam. Skype responds to a Trojan security threat. Here we go. We've got a lot of Trojans coming out these days, and Microsoft's got a big patch Tuesday coming up tomorrow, depending upon where you're listening to us. It might have been last week if you're listening to us in some places. But, Skype fixed two security issues in its telephone service to reduce spam and hopefully limit the damage caused by a newly disclosed pesky spy Trojan. There you go. If you're a big Skype user, you might know about it. Skype wrote yesterday that the new versions of Skype for Windows reduces spam by ensuring that links are not clickable in contact authorization requests. So hopefully they're going to get around that. But, just one of the many nasty little Trojan-y things that are going on. It's pretty big at the moment, especially these hackers or the people that want to get your information are targeting reputable websites and just popping a little bit of code on them, and no one ever knows until it's too late. So there you go. That's what Skype's up to. SMSs are also being used to target Australians trying to get some money out of them. Identity thieves in particular are using an SMS-based lottery scam to target Australian consumers. Now, we've all heard of the Nigerian scams, and they come on your PC and all that. So the Australian Communications and Media Authority has warned of an SMS scam targeting Victorians in particular that purports to being a notification for winning third prize in the lottery.
Oh, good grief.
Yeah. A scam text message.
But I don't remember entering the lottery.
Yeah, but you won it anyway.
Yeah.
Don't you win lotteries daily? I used to. My spam filter's fixed that.
I don't see those anymore now.
Just send us your bank account details and your passwords and stuff, though, and we'll put the money in your bank account for you, even though you didn't enter it.
Yeah.
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 Well, the scam text message asks recipients to call a number and provide their own telephone number, which results in multiple return calls, asking victims to provide their banking details and pay a commission before receiving their prize. Well, there you go.
So you send
That is the traditional Nigerian scam. It's the pay up front to get a bigger windfall, yeah.
Yeah. Had a caller on 3AW last night about Nigerian scams. Did you hear that, Dr. Ryan?
I might have, yeah. They're called 419 scams.
Why? How do they get the name?
I was going to ask you that. Do you know the answer to that one, Graham?
Was that the country code?
Oh, you're very close. I think off the top of my head, it's like the section number in their legislation that...
Oh, okay.
...that says you can't do this.
Yep, that would be right, yeah.
I'm pretty sure that's what it is.
I've been hearing that there's the newest type of scam from that part of the internet is that it's a kind of a Lonely Hearts romantic scam. So you meet somebody online, you chat for a certain length of time, and then suddenly, oh no, I've got my mother needs to go to hospital, needs an urgent operation, I need thousands of dollars. Can you help? And that's the latest type of scam that's going on
really?
Now.
Really?
Yeah, and apparently a lot of lonely Brisbane women are falling victim to this.
Are they?
Okay.
There you go. If you're listening to us on Switch and Brizzy, take notes. Dr. Graham knows these things. It's also the nasties are coming through in instant messaging and social networking sites in a ferocious manner at the moment too. So if you're on any of those, just be wary. Get all your updates updated and stuff, and you should be right with a bit of luck. And don't talk to strangers online, really. That's what it comes down to, doesn't it? Internode are an ISP. Of fairly reputable caliber, really, aren't they? I think on the Whirlpool forums, they're the number one ISP in Australia.
They're very well known, Internode, yeah.
Yeah, they're not available in our area, unfortunately.
No, are we?
Anyway, come on.
Be using them.
Simon, Lyft. Lyft, Telstra got into trouble with that exchange, and now they're opening the doors.
They're fixing it, aren't they?
Internode are actually throttling fibre uplinks to preserve their network. Internode has revealed that the fibre to the home plans uses asymmetric speeds to prevent customers from swamping the ISP's network using their high uplink. Do you reckon a lot of people uplink these days, as in send information from their homes to wherever?
Yep.
What do you reckon they're doing? Not bit sharing,
bit sharing. File sharing.
Okay, well, that explains it. So the Adelaide-based ISP sold fibre broadband services on a network in a housing estate in Queensland, South Australia and Victoria, but all the plans featured asymmetric speed starting at a base of 25 megabits down, 1 megabit up, increasing to, wow, how about this, 100 megabits down and 5 megabits up. Now, that's what I call travel.
A lot of people...
1 meg is what you get on ADSL too.
It is.
Yeah.
Imagine 5 meg. Woof.
That'd be nice.
Wouldn't it?
Mm.
Wouldn't it?
A lot of people wouldn't realise how much upstream traffic is probably leaving their place, especially if they're using these sorts of peer-to-peer file-sharing applications, because they'll install the software and they'll set it up and they'll start downloading, but they may not realise that the software automatically starts sharing what they're downloading and they'll start having this little upstream trickle,
yeah,
which will slowly grow into a
torrent.
Torrent.
Yeah, yeah.
Hence the name. Yeah, or a flood. Mm. And they'll have lots of upstream traffic happening without them maybe realising it.
Yeah. My friend Claire on MSN, who I talk to over the internet, has just said her grandfather's sick and she needs millions of dollars for an operation. She wants my bank account details.
Hi, Claire.
Hmm.
Who's Claire?
She's on MSN. She's someone I met on the internet.
Oh, is she?
Yeah.
Okay. Hi, Claire. Graham hasn't got
millions. Vis-a-vis my warning earlier.
Graham hasn't got millions of dollars.
No. You're wasting your time.
You're chatting to the wrong guy. You're chatting to the wrong guy. Try Warlock.
Give up.
There.
Find another victim. Yes. Warlock's on the chat room says, don't talk to Dr. Ron on the internet. Ain't nobody stranger.
Oh.
Back off, Warlock.
Yeah. If you'd like to come along and...
that's a defensible argument, I would have thought.
It is. If you'd like to come along and throw a few rocks in our forum, yeah, feel free to do so.
If you'd like to insult the panellists tonight, join Warlock and
chat.techtalkradio.com. You don't even have to log in. Just come along and throw a few. You know, it's good. Join in the fun. ISP seek legal advice on copyright issues. This is going back to iiNet days, because you remember how iiNet has sort of been trawled across the coals for allegedly allowing their users to... share copyrighted material and the film mob AFAC are trying to say that, hey, hang on a minute, you're responsible for this because they're your customers and it's on your network, so you're responsible.
Yes.
Anyway, at least three Australian ISPs have sought legal advice on what would occur if they were placed in similar court case. And the film industry, represented by AFAC, has accused iiNet, obviously, of failing to prevent the transmission of this nasty stuff. And, so Exetel was sufficiently concerned, apparently. So they took legal action to try and understand the scenario as well. So there's a few ISPs out there that are getting a bit nervous, if that's the word. The advice appeared to be immediately block the accused service and pass on AFAC's evidence of a copyright breach to the user.
Mm.
So there you go. If you get a little email from your ISP saying, we think you're up to no good, and they're going to maybe cut you off.
Yeah.
Block that service, maybe, those ports.
Yeah. But as long as the ISP isn't being held accountable for the actions of its subscribers, that would be a step too far.
Well, isn't it that common carrier law or whatever it is, the Telecommunications Act, that sort of says that carriers can't be, someone rings up on telephone and says things and the carrier's not responsible for that?
Well, I would have thought so, yeah. It's an extension of that same principle.
That's the situation in the United States. We don't have that here.
What's that? Where the carrier's not responsible.
So it's not enshrined in legislation here like it is in the United States.
So if someone uses a telephone to commit a crime, so they might blackmail somebody or threaten somebody or something like that,
yep,
then Telstra can be held responsible?
Well, in theory. There's no hard and fast law here which says that is a stupid scenario and Telstra can't be held responsible. There's no law that says they can't be. But in the United States, there is.
Well, hopefully this will establish some case law at least.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
Precedent.
Exactly. Yeah.
We actually spoke about this briefly on 3AW last night about all this sort of stuff. But back in the days of, I think the law has changed. I think Susan was telling me too. If someone made nasty, obscene, nuisance phone calls to you back in the good old days, Telstra could investigate and do what Telstra had to do to prevent that person from harassing or doing what they allegedly did.
Mm.
But now I think you have to go via the police to do that. I'm not sure whether that's the case or not, but especially if someone threatens you, you've got to go and see your local and let them know all about it. But
yeah, well, I think Telstra would be also concerned about, because to them it could cut both ways. If they cut off a service for no reason just because someone else has made a complaint, they could be held accountable for depriving somebody of a service unfairly as well.
So they do that daily.
They could get it from both sides. But that's what they'd be worried about.
Mm. Yes. Anyway, hi, Scott. All right. Let's talk about Microsoft. They've got Critical Patch Tuesday coming up, which is tomorrow for us, if you're listening to us live.
Well, it could have been the next
it's Wednesday.
It's Monday.
But Patch Tuesday is Tuesday US time, which means it's really late Tuesday night, really Wednesday.
It's about Wednesday for our time, is it?
Yeah, we'll see them Wednesday, yeah.
So if you've got your servers on, watch out. They'll all would have restarted overnight.
Yep.
As it does, it's talking
about. And if you see your little yellow thing on your taskbar and on your near your clock. What's that called? I forgot what it's called now.
The system tray, yep.
On your Windows workstation, saying you've got updates to install for Microsoft. It's probably a good idea to install them.
It's funny. I was just looking at our chat, just noticing we're about to talk about IT tech, and I've noticed that IT Help has quit.
Oh.
He's one of the users on our forum. Anyway, come back. You need to know this. Microsoft September patch will fix 5 critical vulnerabilities that expose users to remote code execution.
Yes.
The software company warned in the news in its usual way, via its security bulletins, few details were forthcoming for obvious reasons, but everyone's sort of saying that these are going to be critical patches and they're needed for all versions of Windows. So obviously the baddies have been out there and found another way to get in through an operating system somehow, yep. Or through browsers probably, the weakest link, the good old IE8 probably.
Yep, there's some that affect all the operating system versions. There's one there that affects all the Office-type programs, all of those things. I'm just flicking through them.
Well, leading the pack this month is Microsoft Vista with 4 critical vulnerabilities, given significant amount of code share between Vista and Windows 7. Maybe they're going to flow in to Windows 7 updates as well.
Now, there's a new vulnerability has been talked about with IIS Server to do with running FTP on IIS.
Now, that's applicable to nobody unless you're running a Microsoft server at work and you've got your website on it, because that's where the website lives, on the Internet Information Server.
Yeah. That's right. If you're running a server...
If you're not running one of those, forget all about this, but tell us anyway, Graham.
Well, it's just worth mentioning that...
Absolutely. I run one.
Yeah.
I'm interested. Tell me.
There is a flaw in the FTP code in IIS, so you'd probably use that if you're running a web server that's updated remotely. You might have someone else outside managing your website. Or something along those lines. If you've got this, you know you've got this. You know, this is not something that ordinary users have got.
No.
There is a flaw in the FTP software that can allow an attack to occur, and that there is not a fix in this month's patches for that flaw. So you need to go to your Microsoft website if you're running an FTP server on IIS and look at the mitigating circumstances so you can reduce the amount of risk.
I actually don't run Microsoft's FTP server.
No.
I run a different one. It quite often pays to look for third-party stuff these days, I've come to the conclusion.
Sometimes it can.
Oh, yes, probably not, but certainly FTP clients and things like that, and servers, definitely. Adobe, they haven't got anything. What does it says here? Adobe has announced a quarterly patch update, which will be delayed by a month because the firm's security team has spent too much time firefighting critical security problems in July.
Right.
That sums up Adobe, really, doesn't it? They've got fairly major consumer relation issues at the moment, too, with their support and help desks and stuff like that. So I don't know what's going on there in the Adobe camp. All right. I think it's time for a break. We'll have a little listen to a train here, and we'll be back with more after this.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Before we get to the rundown this week, Dr. Ron.
Oh, yeah, you know.
It'll help keep you warm on a cold Melbourne night.
Now, they've actually been pulled off US telly.
So chances are it may be a nice marriage of technology and provider.
I'm fed up with this "you're not living in the right country" stuff on the internet. That's not the way the internet works.
Oh, well, you will work for the government.
Yeah. I'd be hoping they'd be refunding that pretty quick,
we're
smart.
We're in 3 meg hell, buddy.
I'm on 8 meg. 16 or 17 megabits per second.
Suck it up, princess.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show, Tech Talk Radio.
Greetings, everyone. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio, Australia's one-way technology radio show.
If you've just joined us, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio, and at the beginning of our show, we announced a little thing, well, Dr. Ron did, actually, about a competition that we're running for Wacom Bamboo, which is a little tablety pen-mouse combination, which will revolutionise the way that you interact with your computer. Dr. Ron, what have we got to do? You got to tell us why you want a Wacom in 30 words or less, and it could be yours, and you've got to be in Australia to enter, right?
That's it. You've summed it up. 30 words or less. Email us at feedback@techtalkradio.com.au. Tell us why you would like a Wacom Bamboo Fun.
Okay.
USB tablet.
And go into the draw. Apparently the judges are going to judge, as judges do, on the best, most satirical, comedic type sort of answer.
Most comedic response, yeah. The one that brings a smile to our face, yes. And we'll get in touch with you. Yeah, we'll let you know that you're the winner. So you need to have your entries in by the 21st of by the 18th of September.
That's not far away.
It's not. We'll announce, just a couple of weeks, we'll announce the winner on the show during the week of Monday the 21st of September.
Cool. And yes, Maud, the Wacom does work on a Mac. It's the choice of Mac operators, in fact, a Wacom tablet, especially if they are into the design style, you know, Photoshop and webby sort of people. But if you want to run
artist
it on,
types.
Probably doesn't work with Final Cut Pro, but there you go. That's the choice. Oh, yes, it will. Of course it will. No, it works on all platforms. Does it work on Cupcake? Who knows? Let's, while we're talking about Apple, Brian at the office, as I alluded to earlier on in the piece, was quite scathing of some of the upgrades or downgrades for the new Leopard. But apparently there's some other issues which are plaguing Apple at the moment too. One is with Java. Apple has admitted that its Leopard operating system contains old versions of Java that could be open. Could be an open door for hackers.
Oh, good.
Yes, because you can. The Java flaw could allow a hacker to take control of a user's machine if they visit a page online which has got malicious code behind it. The patch can be downloaded from Apple. However, Apple has not provided a patch for the older Tiger operating system. So there you go. And more just to throw into the woodwork, because Java is, well, let me say, probably present on nearly all websites these days with rollovers and things like that. That's what does all those swapping of images and stuff like that. Normally it's a little bit of Java behind
sometimes
the button.
Sometimes it's Java, yes.
Other times it could be Flash.
There's other ways of doing it. Yeah, but yeah, Java's everywhere. It's not only on websites, it's everywhere.
Yeah, it's in your mobile phone.
Yeah.
Isn't that what Symbian is? It's basically a Java-based.
Well, you can certainly run Java apps on it.
There you go. All right, in other interesting news at the moment, the telcos are calling for NBN ownership cap. A bit like the footy cap, the player cap, whatever you want to call it, salary cap.
Mm-hmm.
Several Australian telecommunications companies have asked the federal government to cap how much of the national broadband network can be owned by one shareholder, which means they don't want a big incumbent coming along and buying up most of it because they've got the deepest pockets, I suspect. In a submission to the federal government's NBN legislative framework, several telcos recommended that the ownership of the NBN company by any telecommunications be capped as low as 5%. Now, I think the government was talking about 15%, but 5%, that's mighty low. Do you think that's feasible to run a telco with that? I guess there's a lot of ISPs out there and things like that that may want a piece of the pie.
Absolutely.
5%. Is that good? Is that workable? Tenable?
Well, that means if you've got, that only means you've got, what, 20 companies, 5% each?
A minimum of 20 organisations. Mm, yeah.
But the government's
going to... That's not unreasonable.
Apparently, according to the minister, is going to maintain a controlling interest in the said company.
Yeah, so then, you know, so if the government owns 51%, then you've only got 10 companies with, 5%,
well,
and one with 49, yeah.
You've done the maths, yes. I think it's good. And the NBN obviously started to roll out in Tassie, so go Tassie. They're going leaps and bounds down there.
Don't forget that some the people that might be interested in owning part of the NBN are not only the existing telecom providers, but you know, content providers might want to get in on the act and have a foot in the door. There's all sorts of things that could go on.
Mm. All right. And, of course, Mr. Conroy's been in the news for dragging his heels on the filtering debacle that was allegedly going to be... Well, it wasn't alleged. It was actually said it was going to be announced, a six-week trial back in the late 2008?
Yeah.
And here we are. We're nearly in late 2009. And what have we got to show for it, apart from $44 million or something being spent? I think I read last in the mainstream presses on these filtering systems.
And lots of angry, worried and concerned and confused Australian internet users.
Now, the opposition communication spokesman, who's Senator Nick Minchin.
Minchin, go, Nick.
He described it as a farce.
Yes.
And he
it is.
Called on the government to produce the long overdue trial results, which was supposed to be... The trial was supposed to start in December last year and last 6 weeks. So you'd think by the end of January or February we would have had the results.
And that's right, because some of the big telcos were locked out of that trial, weren't they?
Yeah, That's right.
And then some came on board and said, we're going to do it because it's interesting.
Got pushed back to July, then back to August, then back to September, which is now. And as of last week, Mr. Conroy is still unable to put a date on when the results of the trial are going to be released.
Getting close to an election. This is going to be interesting, isn't it?
Do you think it's a farce? Do you think it's farcical?
Look, maybe there's a level of embarrassment. Maybe there's a level of it was never going to work and how we're going to get out of this. And maybe they're just waiting for that next tsunami or next disaster to announce it and it'll fall off the radar.
Grand final day is coming up. They might announce it half past five on the Friday before the grand final.
I think you're onto something there, Dr. Graham. I have noticed, and I don't know if I subscribe to Senator Conroy's media release feed that comes out. He's very active at around about 5 minutes to five on a Friday night. I got three, I think, in the space of about an hour last Friday evening. So maybe you're on the money there, Graham.
But when the results are released, the trial, regardless of the results, will have been a success, will have been great to have done the trial, have been important to have done the trial and to establish the results that they achieve.
I'm sure that's what they will claim.
Yeah.
Nothing to see here, move on.
That's right. It was important we do this trial and everyone was right. Yeah, it was a complete and utter waste of time and taxpayers' money. But it's important.
Come on.
But it's
$44 million?
But it's important that we establish that, is what they'll say.
Yes.
So where to next?
I could have told him that for a lot less.
Let's assume. Yeah,
you would have told exactly that. Right, Graham. You would have told him that for $43 million.
In fact,
could have saved the government $1 million in taxpayers' money.
As a matter of fact, if they listen to the show, I think we told him that for free.
For a lot less. Yes, that's right.
I think we've even had guests on this program that have said, "Why bother?"
I think we have.
So, they've got to try these things. They went to the election the last time round saying we're going to protect younger Australians online. Well. Bottom line is, it's not a filtering system that's going to do it. It's educating mums and dads to sit by their kids and participate with them online and sort of, help them along the way.
Yeah, you'd do a lot better to address it in other areas, like asking questions like, why is Susan McLean a private contractor now instead of working for the government like she used to?
That's a very good question, Graham. Yes, you must ask that. Next time she comes in, feel free to ask her that. On another completely different thing, go back to the Microsoft camp, because they've got a bit of a party they're trying to organise for October 22. For those of you who don't already have the new operating system, Windows 7.
I haven't yet, but I want it.
Do you?
I'm waiting until I can...
How badly do you want it?
I'm looking forward to taking the opportunity to buying a new computer and loading it up on a new computer.
I think that's the way to do it.
I think a lot of people are in exactly that same situation. Graham and I are lucky in the fact that what we do work-wise, we actually subscribe to pre-releases and stuff that Microsoft have. So we've actually been very lucky to have installed it and tried it out because, just in case people want to ask us questions about it, like
absolutely,
they do.
Yeah.
My favourite feature at the moment, Graham, which I'm having a lot of fun with, is the shaking of the desktop to actually get rid of all the other windows.
Oh, I told you he didn't know about this week when I told you about
it. Absolutely great. You can't.
You'll have to give me a demo. I haven't seen the shake the baby desktop tab.
What
thing.
You do is if you've got multiple windows open, let's see if I can get a. So I've got a couple of windows open there.
Yep.
Now, if I grab this one and I go...
This is good for radio, isn't it?
It's great.
What I've done is I've got a couple of different windows open at once. None of them are maximised. If I grab in the middle of the title bar of one of them and just shake my mouse left to right a couple of times...
Oi, where'd the other one go?
The others all minimise.
Isn't that great?
So it gives you a nice clean desktop to work on that one document you want to concentrate on.
Now, the good thing about that, if you're running a fairly sizable desktop like I am over a couple of screens, that's really handy because you can find things again.
I can understand that.
Yep.
Really, really good. Now, the other thing that I really like too from a purely aesthetic point of view about the new operating system is the rotating backgrounds.
Oh, yes.
It's really nice because traditionally Windows users were, you had one background and that was it. Right click on it, change it.
We're talking
it.
About the desktop wallpaper, the but, image that displays behind all your icons.
Normally the family photo or something like that. And so now with the new operating system, you can shift click and select multiple graphic files in your desktop or wherever they might happen to be.
And it comes with several built-in ones.
There's got some really nice ones
of Australia. Nice photos in there, yeah.
And, you can. It just rotates through. You can sell it how often from a minute or two through to hours or days if you want to. Yep. That was a nice feature. I thought that was really good. So
I'll use that one,
The rumour has it that you can do the same this time round in a certain Leopard program too. Leopard OS lets you do that as well.
What a coincidence.
Oh, yeah. It's the. I think we should call Leopard the Vista patch for OS X, maybe.
Is Leopard going to be the Vista of the Apple Macworld.
Well, I'm not a Mac user, so I can't really get out there and say we have to talk to a Mac user about that. That's why I was interested where JD was this week, and Adam's obviously gone quiet, and Brian at the office, who's a very much a Mac user, is he's fairly vocal about it at the moment, so we might try and get him in and have a look. But anyway, getting back to Microsoft, Windows 7 launch, which is on October the 7th, Microsoft has kicked off a search for fanboys to host a series of parties around the world to celebrate the launch of Windows 7. Hey, guys.
It's 4 weeks from today.
Is it?
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
It's pretty good. So I've got a month to wait.
Yeah, and can I recommend...
No, that's till the launch party. That's not till when you'll actually have one in your hand.
Oh, when can I buy
22nd, one? 22nd of October.
22nd, all right.
So, and can I suggest, get yourself a solid-state drive, an SSD drive.
Yep.
Build it on that. Yep. You'll never look back. You'll never buy a standard regular drive for an operating system again once you've done that.
I've got the SSD disk in this netbook, and it's pretty fast.
Well, there you go. This should...
Fast to boot.
Windows 7 should launch in, if it does on, like mine, around 20 seconds. Very, very nice booting speed. Microsoft is trying to mimic the its open-source competitors, luring party organizers with the promise of a free version of Windows 7 for their troubles.
Oh, there
the opportunity
you go.
To win a laptop.
Organise a party?
Yeah. win a copy of Windows 7.
Yeah.
There's a thought. There you go. So Microsoft is planning more than 1,000 parties around the world, and the company hopes to have over 10,000 people that will attend these parties between the 22nd and 29th of October in 12 countries, including the US, the UK, Australia, India, and, of course, China. So there you go. Well done, Microsoft. In other interesting news this week, millions of people are set to disconnect their fixed phone lines.
Andrew?
Yeah, I'm one of them.
You're one of them.
About 2 million people are considering ditching their fixed lines, their fixed phone lines or the home phone numbers, as Australians move closer to becoming one of the world's first wireless economies. The first time this year, the communications giant Telstra has had more mobile phone subscribers than fixed line subscribers. There's a telltale sign, isn't it?
Mm. Yep.
With... Now, mobile phones now outnumbering fixed lines by more than 2-to-1 in this country. There are 105 mobiles for every 100 people, making Australia one of the most saturated markets in the world behind South Korea, with 114 mobile phones for every 100 people. I want to know who those 14 people are that have lots of phones. But just a quick poll. How many phones have you got, Graham, that you actually concurrently use at the one time? Not talking on at the same time, but that have service, a SIM card in them.
Well, that I use personally, I've got two SIM cards. I've got one in my main phone, and I've got one in my mobile broadband.
Okay, so you've got two actual serviceable accounts at the moment.
Yeah, one of them's for mobile broadband. But
that's still, they're counting those.
Yep.
Dr. Ron?
Just the one.
Don't you have mobile broadcam? Don't you have mobile broadband?
Yep.
You do?
It's in that. I use it in my phone.
So you have one active SIM at the moment?
Yep, I use for everything. Yep.
Okay, well, I plead guilty. I've got three.
Three. You're one of those one in the 14
area.
I know,
that's what I was thinking. I was thinking, what's going on here? I've got my normal voice number, which I use, and I have my the bat phone, and I've also then got the mobile broadband.
So we've got an average of two per user in the studio here.
Yeah. So there you go. You can see why now mobile phone subscriptions are actually taking off. And I don't think we're Robinson Crusoe here by any way, shape or form. So
now when you're at home...
It should be a good poll. We should ask our people on the forums, on the chats, how many active SIM cards they have at any one point in time.
Mm. When you're at home and you want to ring somebody, if you're at home and you want to ring Dr. Ron or ring somebody, do you ring on your mobile or do you go
First time, every time. If our home phone rings... It's for my wife.
So nobody even rings you at home?
Not me, no.
No.
The only person I would get who would ring me at home would be a relative.
Right.
But no acquaintances, business colleagues or anyone like that would ever ring me on the home fixed line.
My home phone rang today and it was your wife.
Well, there you go. Yeah. See, what was she ringing you for? We've spoken about this on the times, haven't we?
Continue this off air, maybe.
You've let the cat out of the bag there, Dr.
No!
It was a good example, though. It's just your wife that uses...
Hang on, I've got to turn my latitude back on again.
I think your wife is single-handedly keeping the landline phone services in business.
That's why we're going VoIP, I'm afraid.
The calls are either for her or from her.
Absolutely.
Yeah, oh, that's strange. What's that noise? Mm. Oh, I know what that noise is. It's my home phone ringing.
My wife managed to actually... She's got a $49 cap, you see, and she managed to get a phone bill of $300 last month. So you go work that out.
Oh, no.
She's on the wrong
what's
cap.
What's she doing?
That she's ringing to speak to my wife, and my wife wasn't home.
Oh, really? Okay, good.
So,
All right, so there you go. We were talking about people going naked here in this country, which I think is probably a damn fine thing. Naked DSL we're talking about, disconnecting their fixed lines to go VoIP and to go for mobile coverage. Mm. So very much a switched-on country, aren't we, these days? Oh, should I say, wirelessly switched-on country these days. Whatever happened to the old, what were they going to do? Remember that Optus thing? And there was a consortium, and they were going to do this Bluetoothy sort of, I can't remember what it was. It's just such a dim, dark memory at the moment. And it was a wireless thing they were going to do out in the countryside. Singtel had something to do with it. Don't you remember? They were all looking blankly at me.
No, sorry.
All right, I'll get back to you on that
one. Complete ignorance.
There was one. I mean, if only Mark was here. He knows exactly what I'd be talking
He's
about.
He's good with all that sort of stuff. When's Mark coming back?
It was one of the plans to do a WiMAX network or something out in the scrub, was it? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, WiMAX. I think it was WiMAX. Yeah, when's Mark coming back? He's back for Christmas, apparently.
Oh, is he going to come on the show?
I don't know. We probably won't be on air. We'll be in the Bahamas sinking back pina coladas by that stage at the Tech Talk Junket for 2009.
Tech Talk Junket. That's great. Looking forward to that.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. My goodness, look at the time. WordPress warns...
No, don't look at the time. Whatever you do.
WordPress warns of a smart worm attack on blogs. Now, you're a WordPress user, aren't
you? I am too.
Yep. Graham wouldn't know what a blog was, I wouldn't have thought, just looking at him.
He reads them. He doesn't write them.
That's right.
All right. So, you got nothing to worry about in this one, Graham.
I haven't updated my Facebook status for 6 months, 12 months.
Haven't you? I know you haven't updated your latitude. You're still in a puddle of water somewhere around town, if I know you, somewhere.
I'm in Sorrento, I think, on latitude.
Oh, yeah, there you
You're
go.
In that Cardinia really Reservoir for many
weeks. Yeah. Sorry, that's a reference for the puddle of water. Anyway, WordPress is warning that a smart worm is spreading amongst users by exploiting an old security vulnerability. The company is warning that the worm is spreading, and it has been identified because of the flaws in the malware's design. The particular worm, like many before, it is quite clever. It registers a user, uses a security bug, which was fixed in a previous time, to allow evaluation code to be executed through a permalink structure, makes itself an admin, and then uses JavaScript to hide inside when you look at a user's page and attempts to clean itself up after you have been there. So this is a bit of an arty little bug. They're very clever, these people who write these things, but maybe too clever.
But you said the vulnerability has been fixed in WordPress?
Well, in some of the in one of the earlier versions, they've tightened up on some parts of the vulnerability. But
does this mean that's
still spreading at the moment.
So it's spreading even on the current version, or is it only spreading through servers that haven't been updated?
No, I think it's still spreading on the current version because they haven't finished dealing with it properly
yet.
If you're a WordPress user, just beware of the little bugs that are
And if you are running your own WordPress server, it's probably worth making sure that you're updating to the latest version.
Yes.
Updating WordPress is very, very easy now if you're running your own WordPress server.
You do run your own WordPress server, don't you? Yeah. That's where the surgery's located.
It is where the surgery's located. You can go to what they call the dashboard, I think, which is the main configuration screen or the first screen you see when you're a WordPress administrator and you go into your WordPress blog. And there's a button up the top, and it'll tell you, it'll say a new version of WordPress is available. Click here to upgrade.
Okay.
And it just is completely automated. As long as you've got the right permissions on your server, it'll download the software and install everything, upgrade everything it needs to.
That's impressive.
Get you up to the latest version. So they make it very, very easy
now.
Nice. If you want more information about running your own blog server on WordPress, you can go to wordpress.org.
Yeah.
There's support forums there. There's download sections there. There's everything.
Helen joined our forum just a few moments ago and has since disconnected.
Hi, Helen. Bye, Helen.
But she came up and said, I'd love to go naked, but my provider won't let me. Thanks, Helen. So, there you go. Everyone's got a little 2 cents to throw into the mix tonight, speaking of naked DSL type sort of things. There's some pretty cheap and tacky television commercials around about naked DSL too, if you can think of all those sort of things that come to your mind. One about a dead bird that comes to mind in particular.
Like a dodo, like an extinct bird.
Yes, yes. The ISP of the year for wrong end of the ladder, I think, anyway. But yes. Did I tell you, speaking of dodos, I went to Father's Day. It was yesterday. For those of you listening to us live, it was probably a week or two back if you're listening to us on the podcast or through other means.
Or it might be in a different month altogether if you're in a different part of the world.
It might be. Yeah, exactly. Well, we had Father's Day yesterday anyway.
Yeah.
I went and saw the new Pixar film called Up, which is a Disney film. But
Disney own Pixar now.
Yeah, well, there you go. But it was in 3D. Have you seen any 3D films of lately with the pop the sunnies on?
Only the first 20 minutes of the Harry Potter the other night and the promos that were on before it, which were impressive.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I hadn't...
That was at IMAX. Was this at IMAX?
No, this was just at the local cinema down the road.
Oh, yeah?
And I was quite impressed. There was a trailer on beforehand, well, like you said, a little short that was all in 3D with little cloudy, fluffy things. And that was really quite good. But it gone are the days of the old red and blue, funny, jaded images and stuff like that. It's all very...
So these were the polarized glasses?
I believe so. Yeah. I believe so. And the image was really quite good. It did actually jump out quite well in front of you. Which leads me to the next question, which I've got to do a bit of research on. When are they going to start bringing out 3D Blu-rays and 3D DVDs? Will there be a copy when, say, Up comes out on disc for home user consumption? You reckon they'll have two versions of it on the disc, the 3D version and the normal version? The problem with that is
the display technology. How are you going to display it?
I don't know. I'm not familiar with this.
Because your flat-screen TV as it stands isn't going to be able to do the polarisation trick to separate the two channels.
They're talking about having 3D television, though, Graeme, in Australia in
Sony
the next
about
few
to launch
years.
Big time yeah, 3D
and,
TV.
And that's what you'll need. So
well, you've seen a special television.
You'll need a special TV, a special screen.
Yeah.
To be able to do that polarisation trick or one of the other tricks.
So how does the digital cinemas or the so-called digital cinemas work then? If you go into the local village or Hoyts or whatever it is like that and say, this is a digital cinema which does 3D, is it not projected? How does it do the 3D then?
Yeah, but you'd have effectively either two projectors or two projectors built into one. I'm not sure quite how they do it. But you have polarising filters in front of each of the two lenses in the opposite directions.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd have to merge those two images on the screen at the same time.
Okay. Well, yes, be interested to get someone on the show to talk about this sort of stuff. I find it very interesting, but I don't know how it works. That's what it's all about these days, isn't it? And Harry Potter was good? Because did that really jump out at you? And
it did. It was very impressive. It was only in the very start of the film, and only in IMAX, I believe. I don't think the 3D version was in other cinemas.
Oh, I wonder why they did that. That's most interesting.
It's just a promo thing for IMAX, I suppose. But, I guess so. I've just had a think, though. One way you could do it on some of the standard flat panels and things would be that some of those can do very high frame rates, like 100 hertz. So if you had your... Instead of using the polarizing trick with the glasses, if you had glasses that actually turned one eye off, so you had glasses that went black on one side for a 50th of a second and then black on the other side for 50th of a second.
Zephyr Beeblebrox had peril-sensitive ones that put both of them black for the same period of time.
Yeah, well, presumably the part of it that makes it black would be the same as that. But,
yeah, it's
but if you time
concept,
it
though,
so that, yeah, if you displayed a 50 hertz image but on the screen, but had use the 100 hertz feature of your screen to toggle between the left and the right eye image, and then have glasses that toggled between them as well, you probably could do it with a standard screen. You'd have to somehow link the timing, though. I don't know how you'd do that.
Maybe that's what's behind Sony's new flat-screen 3D technology. Because when I was at Simpty about a month ago now, there were two types of technology involved. One was a Sony screen, which I think there's a shot on our website of it. And it was quite unique. You didn't need glasses or anything like that. You just stood in front of it and it was like,
oh, well, see,
wow.
That would be different technology again. That would be just subtle difference in the angle that you're looking at the screen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there was another television screen that you actually had to look straight on at it. Otherwise, it just did your head in. It's like taking your left eyeball and swapping it around with your right eyeball and you walked away with a big headache. I don't know. You could only have the viewing angle was about 10 degrees. And as soon as you walked out of that, you couldn't look at it. It just literally gave you a headache instantly.
Yeah, that sounds plausible.
So you'd have to be in optimum position in your living room to watch the television.
You'd be back like those rear projection things.
Surround sound. You need to be in the optimum position.
I was about to say you need
to
be in the right position for the sound to work anyway. So yeah,
yeah. Sound's always been very selfish. At least with video, you can move around the floor a little bit, but sound had to be in that right.
Not with 3D, you see.
Yeah, well, there you go. So maybe it's becoming very much a personal thing. We'll have visors and funny 3D things on very shortly. So I recommend that one if you've got a spare bit of time. You want to go and see good animation? Go and check it Up. It's 3D in your local cinema, and it was a very entertaining flick. Kept my four-year-old entertained for at least 2 hours, which is good going, considering what she's like.
Helen in our chat room says that she can't see 3D because
Helen's back again.
Because her eyes are not equal in strength.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, there's a lot of people like that who don't have good stereo vision, that don't have two good, equally functioning eyes. This is not going to be valid for them. It's just like stereo is no good for people that don't have two good functioning, sort of equally performing ears.
Makes good sense there, Greg. Should be a doctor. All right. just briefly before we go off to a break, before we come back for the Oddspot and Gadget and Website of the Week, AAPT to launch a commercial cache service. Now, I came across this today, and I'm going, what on earth do they want a commercial cache service for? But apparently, AAPT plans to launch its own commercial cache service as part of a push to providing software as a service, according to the chief executive of the company.
Okay.
IT News were reporting that the carrier's existing equipment uses cache services to save the company 25% of its consumer traffic costs, and largely the secret sauce behind AAPT's groundbreaking unlimited download plans, which means they're obviously downloading stuff, keeping it in a really big file server somewhere, which is called a cache.
Yep.
And then, so instead of downloading it many times, it downloads it once and then serves it out to its customers.
Yeah.
And they're going to do this with software.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of ISPs do that trick, and some of them do it better than others.
When you're web developers, it's a pain in the bottom. Let me tell you, because you can't refresh your site. It's like,
Yep, and if you've got a customer on one that's got a less well-behaved cache and it doesn't obey the bypass commands, yeah, that can be a real problem because you can see it, you've updated it, and they're on a link where they can't see that you've updated it, and they ring you up and say, it's still wrong.
It's also when companies have corporate caches or systems within their servers, and it does its own caching as well.
And sometimes what can happen is the company one is on a link that's also got an ISP-based one on, so you've got cache after cache after cache.
Yeah.
And if you've got caches that don't behave quite properly, like a certain ISP, I don't know whether I should mention which one, but yes.
Allegedly or not?
Allegedly.
Okay. If it's allegedly?
TPG.
Okay. Allegedly?
Caches that don't prove it either one way or the other. No, but yeah, aren't quite as well behaved as perhaps you might hope a cache would be, then yes, it can be a real pain in the neck. So. Mm. AAPT, if you're going to do it, get it right.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or you're listening to, be really good.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio, Oddspot Gadget, Website of the Week, when we return after this.
Suffering Succotash. This has to be the best technology show on the internet. Tech Talk Radio.
The 43-year-old claims he was looking for evidence of UFOs and aliens.
Well, did NASA get hacked as well?
Yeah, absolutely. No,
really?
If you need high speed and high quality at the same time, you need a much more powerful transmitter.
It automatically offered me the latest Optus configuration file.
How long did they take to get back to you? And how did they get back to you?
By the time you finished your cheeseburger, it was too hard and you drove away.
That's right.
Somebody else in the world will have had the same problem.
Latitude's everything to me. Yeah. I like knowing Dr. Ron is at any particular hour of the day. Or my wife, for that matter. But they're both of them together.
Hang on a minute. What does that mean?
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show, Tech Talk Radio.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics.
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
In the market for a new keyboard, Andrew?
Not currently.
Graham? Not currently?
No.
I'll tell you about this keyboard, this gadget. This is called the Optimus Maximus keyboard.
Oh, I've seen it in a Monty Python film, I think.
You may have. It's a QWERTY keyboard, but not just any QWERTY keyboard. The Optimus Maximus has the ability to change the function and appearance of each of its 113 keys so you can make them application-specific or even user-specific for different languages. Each key...
As long as F1's reserved for help, apparently.
I've seen this. This is the one with a little OLED screen on each key.
Graham, you've got it in one.
You know what? I do want one of these keyboards.
You do want one?
I changed my mind.
Each key is actually a tiny 48-pixel by 48-pixel OLED screen, which can be customised to display any letter, any number, or any function. You can even associate individual keys with actual program shortcuts. And there's an ambient light sensor on the keyboard, which monitors the lighting level in the room and adjusts the key brightness. The RRP is about, hold on to your socks here, US $1,700. But for more info, if you want to have a look, go to www.artlebedev. I think it is, artlebedev.com.
Here it is, everybody. The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio Website of the Week.
We're talking about blogs earlier in the program. This website is www.informationisbeautiful.net. This is an amazing blog with the author who is David McCandless. David is dedicated to the dissemination of data through graphs, patterns, images, and the very occasional pie chart. He describes himself as an independent visual and data journalist, and he says, "My passion is for visualizing information, facts, data, ideas, subjects, issues, statistics, questions, all with a minimum of words." So if you've got a data set, of anything that you would normally represent in some sort of graph or pattern or image. David actually, well, just gonna have a look at the blog. It's very, very interesting.
Where is it again?
Informationisbeautiful.net.
There is a fine line between genius and madness.
Tested by that much.
I know nothing. Nothing.
Don't ask! For God's sakes, don't ask!
Houston, we have a problem.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
Thanks, Andrew, for contributing the Odd Spot this week.
I thought you'd use this.
A teenage girl who became stuck down a portable toilet at a music festival has become an unlikely star on the internet. Facebook groups have dedicated to Poo Girl, and they've sprung up, and merchandise is now on sale.
You can get caps, you can get...
in honour of the lavatory victim, according to the Daily Telegraph.
This is where technology goes awfully wrong, isn't it?
It has gone awfully wrong. The 19-year-old accidentally dropped her handbag down the toilet at Leeds Festival and made the mistake of then trying to retrieve it. The girl, identified only as Charlotte, was stuck for 20 minutes as rescuers first tried to dismantle the loo, then managed to pull her free. Now, rather than try and help someone in that situation, no, there's people there that
stood around and took photos,
videoing it on their mobile phones. Her cousin Katie told Sky News Online, I think most people would have left the bag, but it did have all her money in it, and her phone and her tickets home and her whole life, really, said her cousin Kate. She couldn't reach it with one arm, so she put the other arm in. She managed to get her shoulders stuck. There you go. So you can go and see her, the Poo Girl, on the internet.
Yeah, there you go. You have been listening to Australia's Funniest Home Videos. I mean, Tech Talk Radio. until we do it again next week, thanks for your company, everybody. Don't forget to enter our Wacom competition.
Yeah, feedback at techtalkradio.com.au.
If you missed that, go back and listen to the podcast, and Dr. Ron will tell you how. If not, tune in next week, and we'll tell you that as well. So until then, it's been wonderful. Bye for now.
You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio, brought to you each and every week by a group of dedicated professionals from within the media, broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, panellists Justin Dunlop, Graham Callaghan and Mark Diggins. Expert opinion from Adam Turner, and our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Post-production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications. Podcast production by Graham Callaghan. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night at 8 p.m. from the studios of 3WBC. The crew wish to thank all the stations around Australia that take the show. Tech Talk Radio is available for syndication on your local station. For sponsorship and advertising, call 03 9818 2756 or visit our website techtalkradio.com.au for more information. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.